and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 460. My name is James Gilmore, and joining me again this week, it's Emily Soden.
Hello, I'm standing in for myself and for Rick, because Rick does not love you guys like I do.
No, I like the fact you're standing in for yourself. That's very good. You couldn't be
Someone
here,
has
so
to.
We're unfortunately joined by you today.
Yeah.
Whereas Rick is, yes, he's in another foreign country. He's hopped over to. He was seeing King before, and now he's seeing another big group of people I can't remember. I'm not even sure I'm allowed to say, because there's embargoes all over the place.
I don't know. Do you know, I don't even know what he's doing, so I couldn't leak it even if I wanted to.
I've decided that embargoes are so stupid, generally, as a thing, that they are now called embargoes.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Literally every embargo we've had this week has been, like, either launched early or completely ignored by people.
Ignored by everybody, exactly. So they don't deserve to be called a sensible-sounding word like embargo. So henceforth, embargoes, or embargle-woggles, if I'm feeling
Ooh, I like
particularly
that.
Insulting. The reason there are all these embargoes kicking around, though, is because there's been loads of big games come out this week. It's another one of those weeks that happens from time to time. So, patch show for you. We've got news about Stardew Valley coming to another portable platform, and Em's going to go mental. A new version of The Legend of Zelda with all the stuff unlocked? What? We've got news about Assassin's Creed Rebellion finally making its way onto your touchscreens. Plus, new releases including the likes of Grim Valor, Candy Crush Friends Saga, The World Ends With You Final Remix, Paranormal Activity game from the actual Paranormal Activity guy. And we've got an interview with the folks behind Brave Frontier The Last Summoner, where we're going to talk about how the game has been changed from the game that took the app stores by storm 4 years ago. But first, the news. If you watch the once AppSpy and now Pocket Gamer YouTube channel, you will have seen a video for a new Assassin's Creed game called Assassin's Creed Rebellion. I say new, it went up in July last year. That's when it soft launched, and frankly, I thought it had been dropped. I thought it was one of those ones that had just decided it wasn't going to make any money, it was no good. Not so. Apparently, it is finally coming out on iPhone and probably iPad as well. We're going to be looking at November the 21st for the launch date of this one. And it is a unique take on the Assassin's Creed thing. We've had so many different versions of this franchise. I'm sure you've played the original, some of the core games, Em. Have you played any of the spin-offs?
What, on console or on mobile?
Anywhere. Because they had those side-scrolling platformer-type ones on consoles. Mm. There was like a trilogy of them, I think. And then we've had like card games and strategy games and a third-person actual wandering around full Assassin's Creed game, all on mobile. We've had loads of different ones.
Nah. Usually I've spent so long on Assassin's Creed, the actual game, that I just kind of don't have it in me.
Fair enough. Well, this one is a side-scrolling game that actually feels a bit more turn-based than anything else. Cutesy, chibi-style assassins, which are very nice. You choose from a variety of different ones, and they all have, like, different expertise. And the idea is you take them into each room, and each room is kind of like an instance, almost. And then you've got someone wandering around there, and then you can choose what you want to do. So you can be like, do you want to try and sneak up and kill this guy? Or do you want to immobilize this guy? Or do you want to try and climb over the rigging and avoid the guy altogether and sneak out the door? And you have a percentage chance of achieving each of these based on what kind of character you've got. Then you select it, and you kind of watch it play out, and it either works or it doesn't. And then you have to react to whether you've moved on to the next room or whether the guard in that room has actually spotted you and is now trying to stab you in the face with a sword. It's actually quite fun, and it is very different as a take, you know, on the franchise, which has always been, well, real-time, reaction-based and all that. So making it turn-based feels quite different. But I thought it played nicely. I was surprised it didn't appear sooner. But I guess they've decided it's worth everyone's time. So iOS and Android, apparently, it says here, November the 21st. So you've got a month or so to go for that one. Check out the video, by the way, because it is kind of cool. Ah, this is much more in your wheelhouse, Em. I should give you this.
You just
tell the people what's happened this week.
This week was a glorious week. You know, there were blue skies, sun was shining until it started raining. Cat has behaved herself. There's been coffee and milk in my fridge.
Good.
And Stardew Valley's coming to mobile!
What?
I'm done.
This is just cruel on their part for you, isn't it, Em? Because you've already played it loads on PC, and then you played it loads on Switch, and now you've got to play it loads on mobile as well.
and I will love every second of it.
Have you got it in you for a third time?
Oh, yeah. Of course I got it in me for a third time.
Okay, yeah, I've just realised you could isolate that and make it sound bad.
All of this whole section about Stardew Valley is it's very much going to get sound bitten at some point.
And it's coming out my birthday.
Oh,
good. October 24th. How exciting. So, yes, they're bringing it onto the App Store. We've got no news about Google Play yet, but it is going to be fully touchscreen compatible, which I guess... I mean, was the Switch version touchscreen compatible as well?
Nah, no, it wasn't. They've had to redesign the UI, and they've built it all from the ground up for mobile.
Ooh.
Which is very, very good.
And it's going to be a load cheaper than it is everywhere else. So it's going to be £7.99, or $7.99, which is, yes, more expensive for mobile, but half the price of what it is everywhere else.
Yeah, to be honest, they could charge the full price and then some. I would still buy it.
I know you would.
Everyone knows I would.
Also, if you have been playing it on PC, you get to import your save files if you want.
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet.
I don't know. Well, some people don't have it in them to like start again if they've got 120 hours in it or, you know, whatever. Mm. And they're like, oh, I like my farm. I'm that kind of person that loves cleaning the slate and being like, yes, let me start again.
You enjoy a fresh start. Yeah, I'm a bit like that. If I abandon an RPG like 20 hours in or something, like halfway through, and I come back to it a year later, I end up going, screw it, restart.
Yeah.
Because I've lost the train of thought and the plot and all that.
Yeah, I did that with Horizon Zero Dawn when I was like 30 hours in.
Really?
I didn't pick it up for a few months. And when I came back to it, I was like, I don't know what's going on anymore. And I just started again and then just played it through to completion.
And you bam through that 30 hours or whatever it is you've already played much quicker.
Yeah, because you know what you're doing. This is the whole thing with Stardew Valley. It's like not only a very, very wonderful and just wholesome kind of experience. There's no hidden underlayer of, you know, militia or anything. It's literally just you have a farm, you're making friends, you're petting some cows, that kind of thing. But there's also this kind of competitive element to it for yourself. As my boyfriend and I were discussing, in that first year, you're kind of building your crops, you're building your farm, and you've got to get sprinklers and things. The more you play it, the quicker you can make that first year more profitable.
Right, okay.
And like get all of your sprinklers and get all of your stuff and collect seeds, and you know what to do to make sure that you can do everyone's side quests and things because you've already played through even just a year.
Okay. See, this is probably the most lauded game that I've never played.
Yeah, I have a feeling that because I and the general community, like people who play Stardew Valley, play Stardew Valley, and they will never have a bad thing to say about it. But I feel like people who haven't played Stardew Valley, like you especially, I feel there's two ways it can go. Either you'll love it, or you'll hate it out of spite. just because I ramp up so much, then nothing can possibly be that good.
as much as I do enjoy throwing things right in your face, I wouldn't be doing that for this. I wouldn't hate it out of spite. It's just because those kind of management style games, those farmyard like growing things, they've just never really been my thing, that's all.
Yeah.
So I'll end up playing it now, because I didn't have a Switch and I don't play on PC. Now I have no excuse. I will play Stardew Valley and I will have to have opinions about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be really upset if it's really not well implemented.
Oh, I'm sure they'll do it well.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. Well, considering it was like originally made by just one guy.
Damn.
I know, it's ridiculous. And the best thing is, you know, Chucklefish continued their streak and just kind of laid it out at the last second, just like they did with Switch last year.
Yeah, it's a surprise. Mm. It's out in a few weeks. So there you go. Look forward to that one. Mark it in your diaries, October 24th. Also, you know, for sending me my birthday card. So, The Legend of Zelda has been released on Switch as part of their NES library that we talked a little while back, that thing you get for subscribing. Access to a bunch of old classic games from the past. However, they've kind of tweaked this version. This is a souped-up version of Legend of Zelda, which gives you... Basically, everything's unlocked at the start. That's what it seems like to me. You get the white sword, the magical shield, the blue ring, a power bracelet, and 255 rupees from the word go.
Jesus.
Which is, you know, you're playing with noclip. Which seems, like, interesting for a game like this. I don't know whether this is just, look, the old Legend of Zelda, the very original one, might appear a bit daunting for some people. Because you're just plonked in the middle of this map with absolutely nothing and you have to wander around and try and find your way and work out what's going on. And perhaps, you know, the kids nowadays, this is what the Nintendo bosses are thinking, I don't know, might be a bit put off by that, and this is a way of kind of easing you into it and encouraging people who may not have played it before because it seemed to be too hard or too old, encouraging them to maybe give it a go.
Yeah, because that's kind of how I would think.
Is it?
Well, I never used to play. I didn't have an NES growing up or anything. I had a Game Boy.
Mm.
That's about as far as I got. So when I was playing NES Online or Switch Online with NES games with Rick, I don't know, it just like, you know how some things should stay in the past?
Are you about to knock the entire NES library because it looks a bit 8-bit?
No, the design style, I'm really a big fan of old games, but sometimes old games remind you how bad the controls were.
There's no doubt that a lot of old stuff feels very limiting and restrictive compared to how they play now. So yeah, it's not unfair to look at old stuff and be like, yeah, maybe this wasn't so great, or they're working within massive restrictions. And some games make that work in their favor and still stand up, and some maybe don't. I think Legend of Zelda probably stands up, but I haven't played it for a long time.
Mm.
But it will be available now in its effectively cheaty form. I say that, but you had this option in Final Fantasy games. I remember they did that remake of 7 for iOS, and that's when they gave you the option to just turn off all the combat and put you straight up to max level, and it was just, you know, just a cheat everything button.
Oh, yeah.
So you could just play it for the story, which I kind of get if you're just in it for the narrative, whereas Zelda is more of a gameplay thing. So this is like creating a super, super, super easy mode.
Yeah.
I suppose. Which is fine. I don't know if you can turn it off. That's the thing. I don't know if you're obliged to use this from the word go, or whether you can have the option to go, now just play it in normal mode, thanks, but whatever. Either way, that's available now?
I think so.
Now, yes, it's available now. That's what Jessica says. So if you've got a Switch, go and download it, give it a go, and cheat your way through Zelda. The JRPG is one of the biggest and most beloved genres in all of gaming, and it's had a number of takes over the years, from the classic 8-bit and 60-bit JRPGs of our youths to the mobile interpretations of today. One of the latest of which is Brave Frontier The Last Summoner, a game coming from Gumi, and I am delighted to be joined by Davey Chadwick.
Hello, guys.
And Baptiste Mami.
Hi, everybody.
Who are the general manager and senior producer, respectively, on that game. Guys, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. Pleasure.
So we'll dive straight into the game itself. This is a sequel to Brave Frontier, which came out a couple of years back, I'm guessing?
Yeah, 4 years ago. It's more a spin-off than a sequel. I mean, it's the same universe, it's the same IP. We have a bit more leeway than the original Brave Frontier to build our own universe on this very, very good franchise.
Okay, all right then. And it feels in many ways like a combination of, A, the classic kind of JRPG formula in terms of the anime-esque visuals, lots of spiky hair and melodrama and big music and orchestral scores and stuff, but it's all flipped into portrait mode. It's got some of that quick battle stuff that you get in more mobile-focused RPGs. It's still turn-based, but it feels like there's a lot of pace to the game in this one, and also you're controlling, sometimes, very large numbers of characters. It's not just a core three people who you look after and, you know, switch between attacks. Sometimes you're doing upwards of like 25, how many?
25 against 25, so up to 50 units on the screen, indeed.
Okay, so why did you go for these like massive scale, almost army-like battles? What was the reasoning behind it, and how did you implement it in a way that's kind of streamlined and works on mobile?
I mean, clearly, this is one of our USB, unique selling point. CCG are nice. As you said, we need to innovate. There's a lot of titles on the market. So we realized that one frustration in the CCG is having a lot of units in your deck and only being able to play with 5 or 6, depending on the game, maybe 7 or 8. And we said, this is sad because we invest a lot of time and energy to build all your units, to evolve the units. And we said, if ever we could play with 25 and even 25 against 25 in PvP mode, that would be brilliant. And this is really basically we swear to how we decided to do another Brave Frontier with this army mode.
We also wanted to have more units on screens because it allows a different variety of situation, you know, from 1 versus 1 to 25 versus 25, and it was mainly to be able to tell different situations for the story, you know, so you can organize like a small skirmish, or you can create a big battle, things that you cannot really portray in usual games.
Gotcha. Well, if anyone's played JRPGs before, which if you're listening, you almost certainly have, you'll know that you kind of switch between characters individually, generally speaking, choose an action for that character, then move on to the next one once their action that turn's been completed. That's not how you do things here. Even when you're dealing with 25 characters, you're kind of dealing with them in groups of five, right? So you've got all the characters at the bottom of the screen, and then almost like on a fruit machine, you can kind of swipe up and down on each character to reveal standard attacks or special attacks or skills. And then if you want to, you can kind of run your thumb along the bottom of the screen, almost like you're running your finger along piano keys, to just activate all the attacks at once. I assume there was a reason, like, we can't fit 25 little sub-menus on screen at one time. What was it like trying to refine that system?
I think, let's go back to the roots. JRPG are good, but sometimes a bit complex, and the idea was to make this much more accessible. We tried to be the link between the West and the East, between Japan and the Western audience in Gumi Europe, which is, I mean, a challenge by itself. So clearly the accessibility, I mean, even everything in the menus, the way you go from a menu to another one, the readability of the interface, this is something which was key for us. And being able to have fun with the game, starting from the tutorial, just swiping your fingers and having a lot of things happening on the screen with 5, 10, 15 units was something really key to us. We didn't want to do something too complex and too, how can I say, yeah, too advanced. The game can be advanced, but you can have fun really only with a few units at the beginning.
Also, we have initiative based on squad, a group of five characters. And for us, it was very important to have this pool of five characters and not for the entire armies. So that could allow later PvP, for example, a good timing, a good pace between player A or player B, or more player if we organize PvE. So that's a core mechanic that was thought for future development.
So how important is something like plot and character and narrative to a game like this? Because it seems very battle-focused, and when you're trying to keep track of, like, 25 characters or entire armies, that can be quite tricky, which is, generally speaking, why certainly Western RPGs either fall into you have one primary character and maybe you wander around with two others alongside and you kind of get to know them that way. With this thing, is it more like a CCG-style game where you've got the art, you've got a rough idea what the character is, and then you just build a great big stack of them?
No, I mean, based on the Brave Frontier IP, the world is very strong. The units, the characters, the story behind are really strong. So we have a lot of very cool units, and not only graphically cool. What we wanted to do is write a story behind all these units and in the game be able to play all the character quests. So for all the units, all the main units, you have some specific character quests where you learn about the background of the unit, what he wants to do, his type of fighting, the story behind. And this is completely connected to the story of The Last Summoner.
During our initial plan with The Last Summoner, we interviewed like players of Brave Frontier, and we noticed that one of the strongest important thing for them about Brave Frontier was the attachment to their characters and their story. So that was really the starting point. So the backstory and the look of the character was very important. So we took very strong care to build the personality of each of them. The principle of having 25 characters on screen is that you don't get them right away. So you get them one by one, you get attached to them one by one, and so you get to know them before creating an army of them.
Now, I'm guessing that you guys were influenced by games, as I mentioned in the intro, that you would have played as a kid, maybe things on the Super Nintendo or Mega Drive, and, you know, you like Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest and all that kind of stuff. What do you think makes a good JRPG, and how do you tweak that to make it flow and feel, I guess, more immediate on modern devices? I mean, some kids today might not be so impressed with lots of very slow turn-based combat, and even core JRPG series like the likes of Final Fantasy have moved from turn-based to a kind of real-time system because a lot of people just find it too slow now. Do you think that's true? Or do you think that there is still a place for this kind of combat in the modern age?
I think there's two sides to your question. One, a good JRPG, I would say, comes from Japan. One with the G from JRPG. So you need to feel that it's from there. So even, again, if we are a European studios, we are based on the Japanese IP, and we respect a lot of codes from Japan. And I mean, a lot of people from Japan, from HQ, from the creative team of Brave Frontier, the first one, were involved in the creative direction of The Last Summoner. So you need to find this Japanese-style aspect of the game in the game you're running now.
I think the mobile games have done a lot to improve this feeling over the past years. So we want it to be even more action based. So this is why you have one touch control to launch your skills and not relying too much on the automatic mode yet. You know, that will mm-hmm. for farming later. So that's the first point. And second point, I think it's about having a very nice swipe up and down gesture and sliding horizontally, so you can run like super strong attacks very quickly by just flipping your finger. So this gesture itself is fun. So we really wanted to make something fast paced and fun to play at the same time.
Gotcha.
In terms of your questions about what makes this game a JRPG and our important angle on that was storytelling, I would say. We start the game with a typical shonen hero, you know, the young farmer. We made a young farmer of crystals, and this guy will lead the rebellion and become general of the rebellion later. So mm-hmm. our idea was to mix a JRPG and a kind of Game of Thrones universe.
Okay.
And to mix, you know, Western armors, Western weapons with anime visuals. And that was very important. So storytelling and anime visuals.
Big challenge, mixing Japanese culture and Game of Thrones, as you can believe.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, you mentioned respecting the ideals of some of the Japanese, the code that you were given, and the core ideas of the genre. Is there anything that, like, you guys were going to do, or an idea that you had where you went back and the Japanese guys you were working with were like, that doesn't really fit with what we are doing? Was there any kind of compromises that you had to make in order to stay true to the original feel of the genre?
No, not really. To be honest, it was very smooth and fluid with Japan. Oh, one mm-hmm. example, there was some question about the mouth on the units. I mean, the original Brave Frontier has no mouth.
Yeah.
And we put some on the new one. I mean, we tested, we presented this to Japan, and then they were fine. There's a lot of dialogue, so it made sense for us, for the Western audience, to see a mouse in order to, well, tell what we have to say. But so globally, Ernest Baptiste, don't really remember any problem we had.
Yeah, it's mainly on the art style that we really improve compared to the JRPG. Generally, you know, what we see our JRPG, you are thinking about pixel art and mm-hmm. line art for what you see on mobile. So it's like very complex drawing. And we decided to replace that by pen brush drawing, like live paintings. So mm-hmm. this art style allows us to bring a touch that is a little bit more Western to those manga characters. And at the same time, it's really great to create characters more quickly than usual games. So we can bring more of them into the game and tell more story about them.
Well, it's a free-to-play game, which probably surprises nobody. How do you get the balance right when it comes to things like in-app purchases? I mean, how do you avoid it just being a case of spending £80, buying all the characters, leveling them all up to the top, and then, you know, just walking through the game? Like, is it still competitive? How have you managed to keep it fair and balanced?
So you have to make sure that when you create a game like this, that even people who want to play free-to-play, you know, mm-hmm. without paying, they can still do it. We can still get some characters, and basically, when we create new events or new dungeons, we always think about rewards that can be obtained if you are a free player. You know, it will take mm-hmm. maybe a little bit more time.
Something which we were challenged on by HQ, by Japan, is the amount of content in the game. Well, for two reasons. One reason is there's more and more games of this style on the market, so we needed to make sure that there was enough content to please the users to play a lot if they wanted to. And also, mm-hmm. with a lot of content, we can give a lot. I mean, we're not an NGO, it's a free-to-play, like a business model of many, many studios. But as we created a very strong production pipeline, we want to create a lot of game modes, dungeon chapters. And if we have a lot, we can give a lot. And you can always play more. I mean, it's a free-to-play again. But at least for 95%+ of the people playing for free, the game experience is nice, it's good. And with the PvP about to be released, there'll be all kind of guilds where you can have beginners, non-paying users having fun, up to obviously the top players, the whales, who want to have fun with their counterparts.
And what was the soft launch period like? Because it was out in soft launch for a little while. What kind of feedback did you get back? And what was the kind of biggest change that you made from launching the game originally in soft launch to now this final finished build?
So we soft launch early August. So we had, let's say, 4 or 5 weeks soft launch. Mm-hmm. Mainly, we were testing the balancing. I mean, balancing in these type of game is everything. If the game is too easy or if you have some blocking points, just ruins your game experience. So there was a lot. Also, we started to build a community and start working with community pillars to get all kind of feedback on everything, the graphic style, the gameplay, the balancing, the weapons, etc. But, I mean, we didn't change a lot. It was, again, a lot of exploit, balancing, starting building the community, gathering feedbacks.
It was also important to have this this period for us as a testing phase to deliver regular episodes, regular content to the player. So the goal is to deliver, you know, one new episode every week. So the beginning was very, very tough. You know, you have to organize all your pipelines for this. You know, at the same time, your updates and the new episodes that will be discovered by the players. And, you know, a new episode is like generally new characters, new dungeons. So it's a lot of things to think ahead and to organize well.
Cracking. All right. Well, we look forward to the spooky Brave Frontier Halloween update. but in the meantime, congratulations on the launch. We look forward to seeing where the game goes next. Guys, thanks for talking to me today.
Thank you very much. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Out and about this week, lots to get through, so quickly, Candy Crush Friends Saga is out, the newest of the Candy Crush games. It is a Candy Crush game.
I was about to say, I was like, no, I'll wait for it and see if it happens, and it did.
You knew it was coming. Well, come on, like, it is. So, differences this time around, it looks a lot prettier than it ever has. Like, Candy Crush was never a particularly good-looking game, it was always a bit crude and simple, and they have given it a fresh lick of paint, and it looks nice. So the candies glow and pulse, and, you know, there's little animations and all that. But it's still that. It's still the same thing. Biggest difference is you've got little characters at the bottom of the screen that are now, like, fully 3D, and that they jump around and whiz around the screen. They can change costumes, and those costumes grant you different powers. So your little pals, your little friends at the bottom of the screen, will give you certain boosts. So they'll have, like, lollipops that let you smash one block or something like that. And each character has a different collection of these, so it's up to you to choose which one you want to use for which level. So that's a bit different. But the rest of the game, beyond a few, like, tweaks where you encounter levels where you have to get a cookie to the bottom of the screen, and the bottom of the screen has got a little layer of a chocolate, like a little lake of chocolate, and you have to get it in, and it dunks it in the chocolate, and then you have to get four of those to complete the level. So there'll be all those side objectives where it's not just about clearing them all off the screen or getting the highest points. It's about releasing a bunch of octopuses or octopi. So quests are different and characters are different, but it's still Candy Crush, still swipey, matchy, matchy, swipey, matchy. And it's fine. It's all right.
Standards. Adequate. Standard, yep. Same old.
7 out of 10. It's still like the slickest version of that match 3 puzzler that you get online, but it's not like it's doing anything that new and, you know, it's not going to convince anyone who hates this stuff. But yeah, out right now, Candy Crush Friends Saga. Something a little bit different, Badland Brawl. This is quite fun, and I wasn't necessarily sure it would be. So, you know Clash Royale, Em. You've heard of Clash Royale.
I've heard it whispered on the wind, yeah.
Well, it seems that Badland... Remember Badland, the original game? The floaty black ball of fuzz going down corridors and bouncing and all that business?
Yeah, no, it kind of didn't get much media attention, did it?
No. Another huge franchise. So they've had two games for the Badlands world, and this is from Frogmind. They've now come out with their version of Clash Royale, which is what this is, no bones about it, but they've added something that makes it quite different. So instead of it being top-down like your Clash Royale is, this is a side-scrolling affair, two towers either side of the screen, and you release your characters and they, you know, march from left to right or float and fly from left to right to try and smash your opponent's tower down. So far, so Clash Royale. However, the way that you activate your troops, rather than just tapping on a card, dragging it out onto the screen and dropping it, you launch them from your tower via catapult. So this is Clash Royale spliced with Angry Birds. And that makes it surprisingly fun. So whereas Clash Royale is pretty much exclusively about timing and decisions. So it's all about just like, when do I play the right card? I play it now and I drop it, you know, slightly to the left or slightly to the right. And that's it. You know, that's the limit of your control on Clash Royale beyond deck building and making sure you go in with the right hand. With Badland Brawl, you've got that stuff, but then you've got the added element of, now I have to drag back and I have to aim my troop. and I can choose whether I launch them right at the foot of my tower, or I can launch them directly across the screen and it try and hit their tower, or I can try and launch it at the troops that are now walking towards you. And if you launch it and it takes a little while to travel, you've got to get the aim right. And then you get these wonderful scenarios where they launch something at you and you go, ah, crap, and you drag back and launch something at them, and the two things collide in midair and bounce off each other. So it's like the tactical stuff you get from a Clash Royale game mixed with real-time skill, angle, judging, reaction stuff that you get from an Angry Birds or a physics puzzler. And it's a really nice mix because it adds chaos. That's the thing I feel that makes this different. For example, you can throw bombs out and then you throw what would be the equivalent of like the big giant who stomps along, you know, really slowly.
Yeah.
He's got a big sledgehammer in this one. And the idea is you launch a bomb out and then you launch your big giant dude. And he kind of rolls the bomb along,
okay,
you know, like pushing it gradually towards their tower. And then when he hits it with a sledgehammer, he might, you know, hit the bomb and it goes poof and bounces into their tower and destroys a bit of it. Well, you get two of these guys marching towards one another. So they have a giant, you have a giant, and they both start hitting the same bomb. And it's like ping-ponging backwards and forwards between them. And then you've got this great little card, which is kind of like a... It's an explosive, but it's like a shockwave explosive. So you fire it out and it lands and it creates a kind of a pulse. It goes boom and pushes everything miles in either direction. So you could like launch a bomb, for example, then launch this pulse wave at it and it just rockets the bomb into their tower.
Oh, okay, so there's a lot of strategy to it as well then.
Yeah, there's loads of strategy about playing certain cards together to create these chain effects. But then when your opponent's doing the same, suddenly you've got this stuff like rocketing all over the screen and bouncing off of one another. You get a lot of ricochet in the middle of the field. It's different. It does feel different. It's the nicest, neatest twist on the mobile Clash Royale thing I've seen for ages. And because it's the Badland guys, it looks great. It's set in that same universe, in that forest.
Hmm.
Bad stuff, I mean, it's free to play, which isn't bad in and of itself. It's got an egg unlock system. This is how you get new cards and gold and stuff like that, is you win a match and they give you an egg. And the way that it works is you can either unlock that egg immediately for no charge, no fee, and they'll give you some stuff, or you can put it on a cooldown timer, say for an hour or two, and it will unlock much more stuff at the end of that 2 hours.
Right.
So that's your option. You can either wait and get more stuff, or unlock immediately and get less stuff. And obviously, if you put it on a long-term unlock, say it takes 8 hours, you can then spend gems to unlock it immediately. So that's where the sort of free-to-play, impatient, spend a bit of money and get some more stuff quickly stuff comes in.
Hmm.
But like with Clash Royale, there's no energy timers. It doesn't lock you out or anything, and you can still progress without playing. It seems quite well-balanced so far. I've won a bunch of matches. I've lost a couple. You know, it felt like it was pitching me against the right kind of players. Very, very quick, very responsive. I liked it quite a lot. So this is iPhone, iPad, and Android at the moment. Badland Brawl. I'd recommend giving it a look. Em, what have you been playing?
I've been giving ELO a go.
Oh, yes.
And I know that you liked it as well when you said so this morning. And I was like, mm-hmm, yes, my boy. Mm. It's just very delightful, isn't it? As a rhythm-based puzzler, because you've got this little speaker and it shoots a wave of sound out. But the wave ricochets off these almost tiki-looking heads. And you've got to move the tiki heads around to get to the point to get to the next level.
Yeah, so it's firing a wave of sound, a straight line of sound out. And the idea is you can move these blocks around the screen to bounce that wave of sound off, often on like a 90-degree angles. And there is a target somewhere else on the screen. It's all locked in one screen. And the idea is to direct this line, this stream, towards the target by positioning the blocks, which is all fine. But it's a rhythm game. It's a music game.
Mm.
So when you tap the speaker to activate it and it starts firing out the sound, whenever it hits a block, it's going doop, doop, doop. And then when it bounces off another block, it goes doop, 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 doop. And then you start putting more blocks in the chain. It's going doo-dee, 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 and starts looping because it's firing out at a set rhythm all the time. And then you'll get instances where the notes are hitting at the same time, so you start creating harmonies. And it's, A, really nice sort of tinkly, music-y stuff. It's like the melody thing is good, and it's fun to build the layers of music one on top of the other, so you end up with these harmonic lines, and then, you know, rhythms and drums start being added and stuff. So it sounds good. The puzzles themselves are quite fun and intuitive, just dragging these squares around the screen to create obstacles for the sound waves to bounce off of. That's fun. But the animation's amazing! Like, the blocks themselves, as you say, look like tiki heads. And whenever they get hit, the kind of their eyes bust out of the screen and their eyebrows go, whoa, like they're being impacted. And the animation is so slick.
These lads are the ones who made Old Man's Journey, so I would have been worried if it wasn't as good, like, visually as that, because these are, they're something special.
Yeah, it's a real left turn for them, because Old Man's Journey is basically just pure narrative. It's basically an interactive storybook. With amazing visuals, but I didn't see this coming from them, like single screen rhythm based block puzzler thing. But it's really good. I've played maybe like 15 levels. I want to play more. It's cracking, like really quick, easy, fun, responsive, charming, and you get that buzz when the tune starts to build.
Yeah, it's just nice, isn't it? When I got the press release through, it was literally just, this is just a casual, chill ass rhythm game for you to play at your leisure. And I was like, I'm on board for everything you just said.
Yeah. It's called ELO. I'm not sure, but it's ELOH, block capitals. I really, really recommend having a look at this one. I don't know. I feel like it might be premium. It feels a bit premium.
Yes, I think it's $2.99.
All right.
Potentially.
All right. Well, I'm definitely going to do a video of this because I want people to play it. So go and have a look at that. It's a wee cracker. Let's do another Dark Souls style game. So a few weeks back we talked about Animus Harbinger, which was a third person Dark Souls style game which really tried to imitate the look and feel of that universe. Here's another one, only this one is a side scroller. It's a platformer. All the visual cues are pulled completely from Dark Souls, right down to the you died end screens and the victory and the they've got Estus flasks, effectively, you know, they're potions, but they are Estus flasks. So all of that visual grammar is there, and it's quite tough and all that business too. However, it's a side-scrolling platformer, and in many ways, when you're playing it, it owes much more to classic 16-bit style platformers than it does to Dark Souls, because you're not having to, you know, run around a 3D landscape, third person, dodging behind people. It's not the same feel at all. It feels like a much more like a Metroid or a Mario or something like that. And even more so because it's got the world hub that they have in Demon's Souls. So it's got a Nexus. And same thing in Bloodborne, where you can visit different levels from a Nexus hub point. It's got that as well. And it's got a massive overworld where you can see where all the screens are linked together. And that's very Metroid in Castlevania. So, yeah, visually Dark Souls, but more classic 16-bit platformer everywhere else. You know what? It's quite good. I think it's a bit of a shame that they have borrowed so much from the Dark Souls aesthetic, because it means that people like me can go, you're just ripping off Dark Souls there, mate. When actually the game itself, if you ignore all that, is pretty strong, just on its own. If they'd just created their own world, you know, their own little aesthetic, and not borrowed that Dark Souls-ian stuff, I might have preferred it a bit more.
Yeah, usually I find in like cases like that, aside from the ones that literally just want to ride the wave, sometimes it's a matter of confidence, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, Oceanhorn is a very good game that unashamedly just pulls from Zelda, is just being Zelda. And this is visually just completely being Dark Souls.
Yeah.
And some of the mechanics as well. But I would rather they didn't still, because they could have just created their own fantasy universe and gone, hey... I mean, it's not like they've called it anything Dark Souls-ian. It's not called, like, Blark Souls or something. It's called Grim Valor, all one word, and, you know, people wouldn't necessarily know. But the game itself is actually a decent action platformer. It feels comfortable. There's a lot of nice dodging, and you can string together a bunch of attacks that feel quite satisfying when they're all executed. And it is tough, and the beasties are good, and, you know, not bad. It's, I think, about £4.99. It's a bit dear. But check out the video review I've done over on the Pocket Gamer YouTube channel. Grim Valor is the name of that one. What's the other thing that you were playing, Em? Let me go with something else.
Oh, I gave Dizzy Knight a go, didn't I? Noodle Cakes, new spiel.
What is Dizzy Knight?
It's just like a super classic looking top-down adventure game where you have a knight who's going on all these quests, but he can only spin in circles. So you pop a sword in his hand and then he just kind of has to swing himself around and like fight off all of these beasties. Until he gets the boss fight of every level.
He's got like a permanent whirlwind attack on.
Yeah, he's really... I mean, he's got to have labyrinthitis or something.
But the actual thing looks like a 16-bit top-down RPG.
Yeah, and it's got like... it's got chiptune and feels very 90s, early 2000s.
Okay.
And it's all kind of done in waves. Each level has a certain amount of waves of enemies, which increase in difficulty. You've got to, like, manage avoiding them and, like, going in, because you can't just kind of run into them because you're not spinning fast enough for them not to be able to get you.
Right.
So you've got to control going in and then jumping back and stuff. And you've got power-ups, and there's consumables which make you have a massive sword for, like, 10 seconds or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then right at the end, you've got your boss fight. Once you defeat the boss, you move on to the next level. The whole thing is that you go as far as you possibly can. When you die, and you can't afford to continue on, because you can usually just, like, put a few coins in and be like, no, let me continue, please respawn me.
Mm-hmm.
You go back to the very beginning, to the very first level. But you keep all the stuff you've earned.
Okay, so it's a bit roguelike-y almost.
Yeah, it's a little bit roguelike-y. And all of that, and it just starts over again, and then off you go. It's got three control systems. So you can either play it by moving your finger around on the screen with mm-hmm. an MFI controller, or by tilting.
Oh. See, it felt, in my head, it felt like a tilt control game.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of just like a ball game, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, I was very sceptical. The tilt control schemes I thought were going to be overly sensitive, but turned out to be really, I don't know, it almost felt more natural than waving your finger around on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Which I wasn't expecting and was quite surprised by.
Well, some games, especially if it's a ball bearing in a maze feeling game, those are, like, instinctively you want to use a tilt control for those, because that's how the physical versions work. And I like the idea of him just, like, being a whirling dervish that you kind of steer around the screen by tilting. That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is currently available on iPhone, iPad, and Android as well. And it's called, what's it called?
It's called Dizzy Knight.
Dizzy Knight. There you go. You can grab that one. Finally, a couple of things. The World Ends With You came out on Switch. This is the now playable version, because we've had a long history of this working, then not working, then working, then not working on mobile. I think it now works again. But this is just another port of the game. It is effectively the mobile version of this JRPG that has now been pushed over onto the Switch. Rick reviewed it, gave it a silver. Still a really good game, really interesting, but he's slightly unsure about whether people would want to return if, for example, they've played the iOS version, which is exactly the same and a lot cheaper.
Mm.
But it still is cool. So read his full review. I'm not going to quote him too much on this one. Finally, there's a game coming out from the Paranormal Activity dudes, specifically Oren Peli, the guy who created the original Paranormal Activity. But they have teamed up with the folks who did
Night Terrors.
Night Terrors, there you go. This one's called Night Terrors Bloody Mary. And if you are familiar with the Paranormal Activity, specifically the third one, I think it's the third one that's all about Bloody Mary, where the girls are saying Bloody Mary three times or whatever it is into a mirror, and then she appears. But in the movie, it's actually not Bloody Mary, it's actually the thing, but spoilers. It's basically an updated version of Night Terrors, that game that came out, which is an AR game. We did a video for it on what was then AppSpy, and is now PG, which has the most views for any video of that particular game, because people apparently liked watching me creep about my flat in the dark, getting spooked out by AR eyes jumping out of the shadows. Go figure.
I was saying, how would you not be entertained by that, though?
I had to whisper as well, because, like, Vivi was asleep in the other room, so I'm walking around like this. So I suppose it does look a bit ghost hunter-y. But either way, this is like an updated version of that, only with proper Paranormal Activity sponsorship business. And I think the first one caused a little bit of a stir. It was one of the better AR games that came out. And does some clever stuff. It hijacks your phone. It takes over the light and the camera and the audio. And it was quite unnerving at times. It was a good effect. I liked it. I like horror. So I'm definitely giving this one a go. It's not out right now. It should be October the 13th. It should be Saturday. But I understand that we're getting access to it soon, because we've talked to them. So expect another video of me creeping around in the dark like a Burke.
I'm genuinely so excited.
Probably more than me. I was saying to you, but because I have to strap the laptop to my back in a backpack, while there are ways of capturing footage off an iPhone, streaming, like Apple Air or whatever the hell you call it on a Mac, none of that stuff works with these games because they take over your phone. So the only thing you can do is plug it into an Elgato. So I said to you, I look like a rubbish Ghostbuster because I've got an actual backpack with an actual cable coming out of it, and I'm wandering around with this attached to a phone, like shining around looking for ghosts. It's dumb. look forward to a video for that when it appears. It'll be £1.99, $1.99 on the App Store. I'll have to see if it's as interesting as the original Night Terrors, but we'll find out soon. That'll do for this week. Another thing, I've been hinting at big stuff coming out on PG for a while. If you keep your eyes on the website, I've been hinting about like a week, 2 weeks, something like that. Next week, a big thing will happen. You will want to see it, especially if you've been following the site for a little while. It's going to be a brave new world for you PG viewers and watchers and subscribers and readers. So I'm really looking forward to it, and we hope you're going to be pleased with what you see. And in the meantime, thank you for joining me, Em.
Oh, it's always a delight to be here. I won't be here next week, so you've had 2 weeks worth of me.
Pure undiluted Em with no Rick. But Rick will be back next week, so one in, one out round here. Thank you for listening, everybody. Like, subscribe, yada, yada, yada. And we will see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.